So imagine a world where you could have like way, way more time to help dogs, help their people, help their families, and a world where you spent way less time on all the stuff that always takes you away from doing what you love, working with dogs. Well, that's why I'm so excited about AI and about what it can do for our profession, for us as dog professionals. And I'm so passionate about it that I've started this podcast. And my goal is to show you how AI can help you take care of things, the things that maybe aren't top of your list, and free you up to focus on why you really became a dog professional in the first place. And how AI can help you not only take care of the boring stuff, but take care of the stuff that's not your primary competence and that can really, when done well, really help you accelerate your business. Again, so that you work with more dogs. Hi, I'm Julie Naismith, and I run a successful global online dog business. And I've been using AI in my business for some time now, and I'm a complete geek about it. And I am totally so excited about the prospect of what it can bring to our businesses. I hope you'll tune in to this episode, but also to the episodes to come, because I've got lots of great stuff lined up for you. And whether AI is something that makes you, the very thought makes you just freak and want to run away, or whether you're already using AI consistently in your business, I'm going to have something for you in future episodes. So stay tuned. All right, let's start by defining what we're talking about, because there's been a lot of chatter. You can't avoid it, right? The last 12 months since ChatGPT, and we'll come on to what ChatGPT is, since ChatGPT launched what it called version 3.4 and 5 about a year ago, it's been everywhere, right? We've had different professionals talking about it. We've seen countless, countless articles on social media, in the news. You can't avoid it. And if you are avoiding it, I don't know how you're doing it, but maybe you're just keeping your head in the sand about it, which is fine. And why there's been so much of a buzz is because, well, AI isn't new. AI has been around for a long time. Artificial intelligence has been around for a long time. The concept of artificial intelligence and something we call machine learning. But what's new, what's been changing in the last 12 months has been the accessibility to, fancy term coming up, to what's called generative AI. And that's what's a game changer. It's the generative AI concept that's a game changer, because generative AI is a whole step change. And it's AI that essentially can create new content like words, images, videos, speech. The key is that it generates. And it generates new content based on learning from existing content, right? So imagine if you were a child who was learning to draw a dog. And so you have maybe some school books that help you to draw, and maybe you have an art teacher who helps you to draw a dog. And so you learn to draw a dog. But then, because you've learned to draw a dog, you actually can start to draw a dog with a different color, or maybe you're a different color dog, or maybe a dog who is in a different position. Why? Because you have looked at lots of images of dogs. You see dogs every day. You've learned how to draw a dog, and now you can draw different dogs. And generative AI learns from information that's fed to it. But we're talking about millions and millions and millions of pieces of information. And it learns to then create off the back of that. So it isn't just regurgitating back what it's learned. It takes learning and it moves it on. So it creates text based on everything it's learned, and it can write new text. And it can come up with images that are new images because it's learned all about images. And that's why it's really different, why it's such a game changer, because now AI can generate things for us. It can create new things, and it can do that quickly, and it can do it without needing tons of input, tons of data, and it can do it without doing anything fancy like coding. And that now opens up a ton of possibilities. I mean, generative AI is being used for so many different cases. I mean, it would be impossible to list them in a podcast. But people are using it to create art. They're using it to write stories. They're using it to analyze data. They're using it to read charts. The use cases are huge and they are extensive. And it's really good. Generative AI is really good at automating tasks like summarizing. It's very, very good at summarizing text, summarizing words. It's very good at creating marketing content. Now, if we look back over the 12 months, although there's the last 12 months where there's been this just boom of AI case uses, marketing has definitely seen a really big uptake, And so we are seeing AI generating, as I said, website content, marketing emails, ad copy, images for ads. But it's not limited to marketing. But for us as dog professionals, marketing is a big part of what we do. And so it's exciting to think that there might be a tool out there that can now help us get better at something that's not our core competencies. Now, you might have heard, I'm sure you have heard, of platforms like ChatGPT. I think maybe most of us have dived in and used our social login, our Google login to access ChatGPT because it's quick and easy to do that. And we've gone in and we've had a look. So you might be listening to this thinking, yeah, I've given that a go. ChatGPT, yeah, I've done that. And ChatGPT is one of the models that people are familiar with. There's also things like Claude, Google have Bard, and it's an ever-evolving number of platforms. And large language models, that's what they're called. So ChatGPT is a large language model, and it sounds really fancy. But just think about it like this. It's an AI system that's been trained on massive amounts of text data. I mean, just so much data that we couldn't possibly get our heads around that. And it learns patterns and relationships in that data. And then what it does is it generates new, really crisp and coherent text based on what we call prompts. Bear with me because we will be talking about prompts in a subsequent episode. All you need to know for now is a prompt is just something that you ask. The way that you ask ChatGPT or Claude or Bard or whatever you're using to do something. You use a prompt. The prompt is the instruction that you give these models. And the output can be really powerful. Now, if you were an early adopter or even a recent adopter and you've been into ChatGPT and you've asked it to do something for you, you might have got an output that you thought was great, or you might have got an output that you thought was awful. In my certified SA Pro group, so what I do is I focus on separation anxiety and I teach other professionals how to do separation anxiety cases. And I have a bunch of graduates who've gone through my certification program, and we talk about non-separation anxiety stuff an awful lot. So we talk about the business side of things, and we've been talking about AI, and we discuss evolution in AI every month when we meet. And one of the things that we talked about was, could we generate content that we trusted and that we thought was valuable? And what we did was, some people use Claude AI. We did a little test. Some people use ChatGPT, and we tried to develop a blog post. Now, if you were to try it right now, I don't know if what your specialism is, but say you specialize in aggressive dogs, or say you specialize in adopted dogs, dogs adopted from abroad. If you went into one of these platforms now and you just put something really simple in, like write me a 1,000 word blog post about Romanian dogs, you will get an answer. One of the things that these platforms always do is they give you an answer. Let me just explain why. They give an answer because they're essentially systems that are based on, well, they generate stuff. And so they're always going to try and generate stuff. And because they've got all this data that they've trained on, they can usually always, almost, there are exceptions, generate some content. Now, the quality of the content can be all over the place, and it depends on how you get the platform to do your thing. But the content, it will always try and generate content. Because it's based on all this learning, the way that it tries to answer prompts, essentially the questions that you're asking it, is to come up with the most likely response. So what would happen next? If asked this question, what is the most likely response to that question based on everything that I've been trained on? And I'm calling it I now. I'm saying I like it's a thing, like it's a human, but you know, kind of you, when you start interacting with it, you do start calling it or they or and so on. And you might start saying please and thank you. If you've used ChatGPT, you might have said, please could you? Really common that we do that in prompts. But let's come back to that probability thing, because it will try and give you a probable outcome based on everything that it's learned. So it's not looking for an extreme answer. It doesn't want an answer that's an outlier. It sifts through all that data in an instant and it comes up with something essentially quite safe. So if you ask it for a 1,000-word blog post on Romanian dogs, it won't dive into something really deeply niche because it's been trained on lots and lots and lots of data. And of course, one of the things we know about information that's out there, particularly about dogs, lots of information, while not consistent, but there are definite themes. So you might, I don't even know. I might go and do this after this podcast. I might ask ChatGPT to write me a blog post about Romanian dogs. But I suspect I'd get things like the number of dogs that are typically adopted within outside of Romania, maybe how many there are in certain countries. I might get something back about sometimes these dogs exhibit problems. Sometimes these dogs were roaming. So it's looking for what's the most probable data that I can provide in response to this. It doesn't want, you know, knock it out of the park different. It wants to be safe. It wants to be average. It is by definition an averaging process. And that can mean that your content comes back and it seems fairly average. But that's actually to be expected, especially if you put a very simple prompt in to start off with, which most of us do. Now, I said, bear with me because we're going to go into prompting later on in a subsequent episode. But I just want to raise this with you because if you've gone into ChatGPT and you've asked it to do anything and you haven't spent a lot of time getting to know ChatGPT, then chances are you might have been disappointed with the output. You just might. I mean, lots of people are the first time they interact with any of these models. And it can mean that they give up. In fact, I saw some data recently which said that the uptake of ChatGPT had been significant up till about August, and then it started to drop off. And it seems like that's anecdotally, when you speak to people, I hear a lot of people say, oh yeah, I tried it and it was awful. So I can see why there was this huge rush of people going to ChatGPT or Claude or whatever, and then giving up. And by the way, I'll link to all these things in the show notes so you can go and try these things yourself if you haven't tried them already. So don't give up if you've tried ChatGPT or Claude and found that the output is awful, because it isn't just a case of go in, spend a minute and expect brilliance. There's way more to it, and we will be covering that in subsequent podcasts. But the averaging concept is really important. So just remember that. It's always going to try and give you something that's safe. Now, there are occasions where it will, because it's generative, because it creates stuff, it has been known to create answers that don't exist. So if you are using it to write content that's in your area of expertise, you're going to spot that. And that's important. You're going to spot what we call hallucinations, and you'll always check for those. But that's really what's going on with generative AI. And the reason it can help us as small business owners is because it's really good at producing stuff in volumes, at pace. So classic examples that once you get going with ChatGPT, once you get to understand how to write good prompts, then you can start to generate excellent marketing copy, you know, really good posts for your social media that are likely to get people to engage. So for example, if you wanted one of these models to write a social post for you, you definitely want to tell it that you're looking for a post that is engaging, that you want people to comment on. And here are some things that if you just want to go and play with ChatGPT today, have a go at this. Have a go at generating some social media ideas. So take your topic. Let's say it's aggressive dogs. The first thing you want to do, I said I was going to do a whole episode on prompting and I will, but I can't help but give you a little teaser now. The first thing you want to do is define the role that you want ChatGPT or whichever platform you're using to play. And you tell it that it is that doing that job. So a really good what prompt for a starter prompt for getting it to help you with marketing is to say you are, so you type this into the message box, you are an expert in creating social media content. You could put a specific platform. You could put TikTok or Insta or Facebook, whatever, X, and say you are an expert in creating copy for Instagram. Right? Okay, so that's the role. Then the next thing is to say the task. And I actually like writing role and I like writing task. Task, you need to come up with 10 different social media posts, Instagram posts, around aggressive dogs. Now that's quite broad. So then what I like to do is give some context. So I will then type context. When talking about aggressive dogs, let's just say focus on dogs who have problems with strangers. Only give advice that focuses on positive reinforcement training. Don't give any hints or any allusions to any training methods that use aversive tools. Examples include shock collars, prong collars, dominance, and so on. Right? So you get quite prescriptive with it. And then ask it to generate the task. The other thing I like to do is ask it to generate the post. The other thing I like to do is say, give me 10 versions, because I like to pick, and say, make it no more than 200 characters or 300 characters or whatever. Include emojis, but don't include more than 3. Now, when we get to the prompting episode, I'm going to tell you how to get it to write in your voice, because you can absolutely do that too. And then give that a go and see what happens. Then I like to, because it's a step process, imagine that, you know, ChatGPT is just your really willing, keen assistant who wants to learn. I get the 10 versions back and then I'll say, okay, let's take number 3. And then you might say, let's focus on a certain aspect of number 3. So you really like version number three, but it's not quite right. So then you can say, okay, let's rework that. Let's focus on, and so on. So it's a back and forth. You never expect the perfect outcome first time. That's not what you'll get. You're going backwards and forwards. But that's if you are struggling to come up with content for social media posts, then don't, because use one of these platforms to help you do that. So it's brilliant for captions. It's really good for marketing copy. It's very, very good for summarizing reports and summarizing documents. Depending on which platform you use, there is a limit, a character limit. Claude has less of a character limit than ChatGPT, but do know that you are limited to the word count. But there are ways to get around that. But it's really, all these platforms are really good at summarizing. They are summarizing geniuses. It's brilliant for generating ideas for things like writing newsletters or podcasts or blogs. So maybe it doesn't write the blog for you, although you definitely could with a really good prompting process. But maybe it just helps you generate some blogs. Maybe you want to come up with some SEO-friendly blogs, search engine optimization-friendly, so blogs that Google's going to like because you're covering words that Google knows people search on. And it's very, very good at automating customer service responses. That's one of the biggest uses that we have for it in our business. So we use AI tools to read emails, and then come up with answers to the emails. There's always a human in the loop. In everything in my business where we use AI, there's always a human in the loop. But it just cuts down some of that legwork. And the more we use it, the better it gets too. There are so many applications, and during the course of this podcast series, we'll be diving into each of them in a bit more detail. For example, in an upcoming episode, I'll be talking to my good friend Barb McGrath, who's an expert in SEO and also a complete geek for AI, just as I am, about where we think things are heading with AI and SEO and what we could do today to use AI to help us with our search engine optimization and our ranking. But obviously, everything isn't necessarily completely peachy. I know that many of us are really worried about privacy, and that's a very valid concern. We should be worried about our privacy. We should also be worried about the privacy of our clients. And AI is trained on lots of public data. I mean, actually, Barb McGrath and I, when we were chatting for the podcast episode that you'll hear coming up soon, Barb asked me about my book, because I've written a few books on separation anxiety. And we know that AI is trained on books. There are legal challenges about that. Some prominent authors saying that they're not happy with that. Now, I'm not going to go into what's going to happen with those lawsuits. Let's just watch them play out, because certainly people like companies like ChatGPT or Anthropic, who developed Claude, they have their position. Their legal team has a view. The author's legal team has a view. But these AI platforms are trained on lots of public data. So Barb said to me, how would you feel if it was trained on your book? And I said, well, you've got to remember, it's trained on huge, huge volumes of data. And my book does okay as a dog book. So if these platforms, these models are trained on more data than we could ever imagine, I'm going to guess that at some point it might have been trained on my book. And that's not bigging up my book. That's just like it's trained on a huge amount of data. So let's assume that it could have been. And I feel okay with that. I totally feel okay with that. If you went and bought my book today and you read my book and then you wrote a blog, because I've now taught you something about separation anxiety and you write a blog about separation anxiety, then that's just learning. That's how we develop knowledge. It's innovation. It's not plagiarism. Plagiarism would be if you'd taken my book and you tried to paraphrase elements. I mean, obviously, direct copying is plagiarism, but plagiarism can also be, I am literally just using this source to create my own version of it. So I try and change words and I be clever about it. So that's plagiarism. But if I learn something, if you read my book and you learn something about separation anxiety, or maybe you've read a few websites that focus on separation anxiety, and now you write a blog about it, that's not plagiarism, that's learning. In fact, if I said to you, look, I know you know nothing about separation anxiety, and by the way, I'm not saying you don't know anything about separation anxiety, but let's just say, if I said to you, I know you know nothing about separation anxiety, but I think you should have a blog about it on your website. It would be really good for you. What would you do? You'd go off and you'd do your research and then you'd write a blog about separation anxiety. So you'd train your brain on lots of public data, which is exactly what these models do. So I don't have a problem with that because it isn't copying. Now, somebody said to me, but hang on a minute. If we're all using AI to generate content like website copy, like blogs, isn't it all just going to look the same? Well, of course, there is the risk because AI is trying to average stuff. But that's not how it ends up. If you could go into these models one day and use the same prompt and get a slightly different output yourself the next day. And the content doesn't look the same. And it, actually, if you are just like putting in a very simple prompt and then accepting that as the output, you need to put more effort into it to create the content. And that's where the originality comes in. The originality comes in via the prompt. Of course, I understand. I was there too. I was there just putting in really simple prompts and going, oh, that's a bit bland. We've all done that. I suppose what I'm trying to say is I'm trying to get you to think about, well, hang on a minute, maybe there is a way of using this better. And then when we start to use it better and our prompts are more specific, the content isn't plagiarism. The content isn't copying. It's generated. It's generated based on our prompt. It's generated based on what we asked it. But yeah, we're right to be worried about data privacy because these models are trained on public data. But as far as we've been told, and there is an element of we have to trust the terms and conditions of these models, AI doesn't store personal information from that data, right? So that's really important. And the laws around privacy are ever evolving. Now, later on in the series, I will be interviewing somebody who can talk much more eloquently about AI privacy. So we won't go into it in depth here. But one thing that I always bear in mind, and I learned this from the forum, the group that I belong to, which is called the AI Exchange. And in there, we talk about privacy. And one of the things that stands out for me was the advice, if you wouldn't put the information on a social media platform, don't put it into an AI model, right? So if you have a client and you name that client and you say, let's, for example, say we have a client called Jennifer and her dog has been struggling with separation anxiety ever since she split up with her husband, Brian. And that's had a financial impact on them. And they were living together in Roehampton, but now they've had to move because of the financial constraints. And that's also, now they split up, that's also affected their dog. You would not put that on a social media post. So if you have information like that, and a classic place that information like that might exist could be in a transcript, because that might come from a Zoom call that you have with Jennifer. And you might want to summarize that Zoom call. So just remember the rule. If you wouldn't post it on social media, don't put it into one of these models. Instead, just go into that transcript, search and replace on Jennifer's name, call Jennifer client A, and then search and replace on Brian and search and replace on where they live, and just make sure that the data is anonymized. You know, the type of post, you think about it, when we're in dog groups, when we're in groups with other dog professionals, don't we often say, I have a client who, and she, you know, so we do describe what the client's background, but we're not giving away the information that could identify that person. So that's the really important thing. Don't put personally identifiable information into one of these models. All right. So if you wouldn't post it on social media, don't put it into one of these models. And we've got to hope that the companies who are pushing out these models, who are at the forefront of generative AI, are going to build AI responsibly. So yeah, there is a bit of trust and a bit of hope there. And if it's just something that you're not comfortable with, well, maybe you will become comfortable as you see the field play out, as you see things play out. But you know what? AI is here to stay. This is a genie that's not going back in the bottle. And this is something that we either need to figure out how to work with now or start feeling way behind as things continue to progress. Okay, another concern is copyright. So what about copyright issues? Well, I touched on it. Because AI models aren't plagiarizing or ripping off copyrighted work. They are learning. They are learning to generate. And these models would say that they are inspired by content. And it's way beyond my pay grade to explain the legal situation, what's happening with intellectual property law, because, well, I just, like, every day things change. But I think we'll see big developments and big changes as intellectual copyright, intellectual property regulations and laws start to catch up with this whole new world of generative AI. So where does that leave us? Well, I wouldn't be doing a whole podcast series on AI if I didn't feel passionately that this could be a massive game changer for you. I would love it if we, as positive dog professionals, get out there. Get out there first. Get out there ahead of the rest of the profession. One thing that we're going to talk about later is the ability of AI to analyze images and increasingly analyze videos. Because I tell you, when that happens, the TikTok trainers, the ones who are abusing dogs, the ones who are subjugating dogs, the ones who are suppressing behavior and not changing behavior, they are going to be called out in a way that we could never have imagined being able to call them out. And so I think that's really exciting for our profession, because although AI generates stuff, it generates stuff based on information. And we've got to hope that the more that people can access quality information, the more they're going to call out these people. So I hope that you will join me for the whole of this series, that you'll get as excited about AI as I am, and that you will start to see the possibilities for how it can truly change not just your business, but the lives of the dogs that you get to work with and our profession as a whole. So thank you for listening today, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode. Bye for now.